Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hi, Dr. Honora Wall here, welcoming you to the What in the World is Dyscalculia podcast. And this podcast is supported by the EdCalcLearning.com company, where we have a lot of individual services and help for people with dyscalculia and quite a few research articles and information for you. We also work quite a bit with the Dyscalculia Training and Research Institute, and that is a nonprofit based here in the US that works on a larger scale with schools and school districts and individuals. If you have any question, email me at either one of those places. And our podcast talks about the math learning disability, which is called dyscalculia. So in this episode, I'm actually going to talk a little bit about research in general, not necessarily a specific study on dyscalculia, but I do want to talk a lot about research in this season. So we're going to start with an analogy that I think will help us all understand some of the limitations of being research-based, research-informed, just talking about research in general with other people, be them colleagues in the education sphere or just other parents or people who may or may not have had a lot of exposure to published research. Because we do want things to be research informed. We want to know that someone has taken a good idea and studied it, and then they can tell us what they found. But until you've really done some research studies, it's hard to know what goes into that and what you can therefore take from a research study. Here's my analogy. This is what got me off on this tangent. I was having a conversation recently with a friend and colleague who talked about a friend and colleague who was using in their AP Psych class a research study that says people who make their bed every morning make more money. So this was our conversation. What it kicked off in my head is, first of all, talking to a friend about their friend is your trigger to go find the original source. You've got to go back to the actual article, not the referral from a few steps removed, not the AI-generated lead-in, not the potential clickbait headline. Go to Google Scholar, keep clicking back through articles if that's your beginning method, find the original source material. So that's part one. And then part two, and I'm not picking on the study. I want to make that clear. If you like making your bed, make your bed. If you like finding anything that will give you an edge to be more financially successful, find that edge. Try out different things that could help you be more financially successful and see what works for you. If you don't want to make your bed, don't make your bed. I'm not concerned either way. I'm really just talking about how we use research in our conversations and how we use studies in our conversation and what are some best practices we really should be following in that sphere. So the first thing that I thought was, okay, this sounds like a really great idea, quick fix. If you do something simple at the beginning of every day, it's going to be tied directly to earning money later. So first, I want to point out a flaw in using that kind of thinking to interpret studies and research, because it's something that we do quite a bit. And just as people, we fall into this trap. We all do, myself included, and we just have to check ourselves when it happens. So here's the flaw. Thinking that one study can be generalized to all situations. And in the same vein, thinking that any studies determine an absolute cause and effect. That's not how statistics work. We could say that we looked into something and we found a statistically significant difference. All things considered, we expect to see this happen more often than that. That's as close as we can come with statistics. We don't have 100% return on pretty much anything except that living things die. That's pretty much it. Everything else has some little bit of ends that don't quite meet the middle. And what we talk about in research studies is the middle. It does give us the best bang for our buck in most situations. That's why we use research studies, and they are very important. But they're not a direct cause and effect, and they're not always the only cause making an effect. So while it may be true that people who make their bed tend to make more money, it's also true that plenty of people make their bed and don't make very much money. It's also true that some people who never make their bed also earn more money. And then, of course, we have to ask, earn more money than whom? Then what? What is our standard? And that's where our standard deviations come from. Here's what we expect. Are we going further or behind? But what are we comparing it to? So that's an important question when you're looking at any research study. What is the standard we're comparing against? What is the change that we're trying to measure? And then account for the situations where that change does not make a difference. It also begs the question, is that the only thing that has an impact on future earnings? Are there any other variables besides just making a bed that would impact future earnings? Does it matter what time this person made the bed? Could it have been in the morning? Could it have been at night? Could it have been every Saturday afternoon? Does that have any impact? Maybe it's just the consistency of doing something you don't like, because most people don't like making their bed, making yourself do that uncomfortable thing early. So you've broken the seal for the day. And are you then more likely to do more small things that add up to big results? Are you then more likely to do things you don't particularly enjoy because of their perceived benefit? It could have been any one of those things that were used as a research question, as that hypothesis. So we have to look at that as well when we're looking at research-based practices or research-informed ideas and getting them into practical strategies, especially in the classroom. We also want to be careful about bias, and this is something that researchers will put in the beginning of their studies. If they think they have a bias or any kind of conflict, they state it so you know up front. And that could be anything from, does this person who did the study really particularly enjoy a clean, nicely made bed? Maybe they had an inherent bias towards that. Does this person who wrote the study really enjoy doing things that feel uncomfortable? Maybe they have an internal reward system that's tied to that. It also includes the idea that everyone has a bed, that everyone has a nice set of sheets, that everyone has the time in the morning to make that bed. Could those other environmental and societal factors influence making more money? So we have to be careful looking at all those variables and add bias. We also want to be careful because sometimes things have a moral bias within society. And that can influence a lot of our research studies. Again, a good researcher is going to analyze that before they conduct their study, and they're going to put it out there. So you can go find out what their frame of mind was when they started their study. But here's the moral implications. It sounds really good to make your bed every day and your room looks clean and nice. This is also a really nice idea for most parents. They like to tell their kids to go clean their room and make their bed. So are we using any kind of propaganda throughout our study? Or does the study reinforce propaganda we enjoy? And therefore, we cite the study when we talk to other people. Maybe yes, maybe no, but it's a question that needs to be examined when we're talking about research. Looking at those different variables, there's another big piece of research. How many things were tested in the study? Did it only look at people who made their bed versus people who did not? Did they also look at economic background, family background, levels of education, field that they worked in, gender, age? I have no idea if any of those things would necessarily impact lifetime earnings. I can make my own assumptions and have my own bias. And then I can go look at other studies and see how they were conducted and see what information that yields. So this is a lot of what we really should be talking about in our statistics classes. It's also a lot of what we should be talking about in geometry. We've got to get a lot of this algebra out of geometry. Algebra has plenty enough of its own courses. Algebra 1, Algebra 2, there's a ton of it in pre-calc and calc. Now we shove it into middle and elementary school. Let's leave geometry for critical thinking, logic statements, and proofs. If you're going to say something, you had better be able to justify it with a solid reason. And those reasons come from very specific small places, definitions, postulates, theorems we've already proven. But I digress. Going back to the idea of this research study. So once I got onto this track of how do we talk about research, where does it come from? Are we really thinking cohesively about everything that can impact a research study and using that when we read them? And then try to apply them. And the best thing you can do, as I said in the beginning, is go to the original source, which I would love to bring you, but I couldn't find one. I'm sure there probably is a research study in a peer-reviewed journal that examines this idea. And if so, if you find it, please send it to me, Honora, Honora, at educalclearning.com, or Honora at thedtri.org. If I get it, I'm happy to do another episode where we examine it and talk about it. I couldn't find it. I found a lot of articles and stories and a few books and TV shows that talked about a study that says, but I could not find a link that went back to the study. I found quite a few articles on Google Scholar that looked at different things related to beds, usually involving a sleep study that talked about how much sleep a person got at night, whether or not they could make up that sleep, how that sleep impacted the way they felt during the days. I found some polls, which are people's personal opinions, which is valid in many places of research, especially qualitative research, but that's different than quantitative. So I'd like to know, is there a study? How is it done? Was it qualitative or quantitative? Was it both? Did they do a mixed methods? I'm just not sure. But if I can't find it on Google Scholar and I can't find it through other research avenues where I'm going to look for the article, then I really question. I feel like then and any idea, not just making the bed. Any idea becomes part of our pop culture, part of our storytelling vernacular. But if none of us are going back to the original source, then we have too many interpretations. It's a telephone game, and we're not really looking at the bias, the limitations. What was the statistical significance? Were any other variables included? We're just left with too many questions and not enough answers. But that's really annoying and time-consuming, and more than what a lot of people want to do. They want to know, a study said this. Now I can trust it and I can use it. But we want to be really careful with that. Clearly, I'm using this as an analogy because most of us have a bed and most of us have a preference on whether or not we make that bed first thing in the morning. Most of us would appreciate greater financial lifetime earnings. So I'm using it as an analogy. But I want you to apply these things to any research-based program, research-based idea, research-informed, anything at all. I want you to go back to the original source, and I want you to get comfortable reading about the limitations, reading about the results. Even if you're uncomfortable with the standard deviation and the p hat and the graphs, at least go to the summary. Look at the methodology section so you can see who was included, who was excluded, and how the study was presented, how it was designed. These are things that are going to give you proof of concept and the ability to trust in results, and then you can analyze it through an application lens and try things out in your classroom. And if you're teaching upper level math and science, these are some really important questions to generate in the classroom and get some class discussion around. Statistics is not just figuring out standard deviation or the z-score. Any computer program can do that. Any calculator can do that. You can do it by hand. It's really not even that difficult. It's just time consuming. Understanding what that means and the limitations around it and the application, that is the really important part of studying statistics and understanding research. In geometry class, I want you to spend a lot more time on logic statements and proofs, because having reasons that justify your statement, that is the most important thing that we learn in geometry, because it changes the way you think and it develops those critical thinking skills that make us better at analyzing our world and the information that we get. Big part of data science, too, understanding the information we're given and questioning the information against reliable methods. So that's the lens we're going to use throughout this season. We are going to do a lot more analysis of research studies around dyscalculia, and the DTRI is looking to embark on a couple of exciting ones. So hopefully, we'll be adding to the knowledge base of published research around the math learning disability. And we are working on getting more of these posted on the website so that you can go read the original source material yourself. Don't take my word for it either. Verify everything that anyone tells you about dyscalculia, especially, but in general, trust and verify. All right, I am Dr. Honora Wall. I'm really glad that you joined us for this episode of What in the World is Dyscalculia? And if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future podcasts, or if you want to send me the research study tying making your bed to future lifetime earnings, please send me an email. I'm happy to hear your comments. Have a great day.